episode of Tales from the Fog. I am your host, Veronica, and with me this time is the charming, fantastic, smart, and incredibly handsome Casey. Casey, say hi to the good people.
Hello, good people.
How about that for some role reversal? I said that I wanted to engineer this episode, and Casey said, well, why don't you take the reins on the intro? And I thought, are you sure that's a good idea? But here we are, and so far, so good, I hope. So, Casey, what's new?
The inmates are running the asylum.
You love it.
Not much. Just been working a lot, and that is about it.
Yes, that's typically how it goes after the haunt season wraps up. Even though we weren't part of any one haunt, I still feel like there's a come-down period that one must go through.
It's almost like the kids that come back from Burning Man, they have those decompression events. I feel like for the post-haunt season, we should have a decompression event.
I think they do.
They have the Haunter's Retreat.
Retreat, we've got Ghost Town has their party every year. I'm sure other scare zones have parties too.
Yeah.
They have their post-event kind of wrap-up parties, and they do awards and fun things like that. So I guess they exist in that sense. And then the Decayed Brigade will have one at some point. That'll be it would technically like our summer party, but it'll happen probably after Christmas.
Yeah, well, because we got so busy this summer, we didn't have time to schedule a barbecue.
Which is a great problem to have.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have a problem when you are a performance troupe, the problem being that you're too busy is great.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the change from having a season to no longer having a season. Before, right. The season ended, we're done.
Yeah.
And now there is no end to it. It just keeps going.
It does keep going. And now I'm getting requests from people about information on how to perform with their organization or their school or, you know, performing at their party. So the requests used to come in to just a handful of people, and now a lot more members are starting to get those requests, which means it's even more of it's, you know, no longer a seasonal business.
Yeah.
It's become year-round, which is great and exhausting, but it's because we love doing it, and it's not the haunt season most of the time. It really scratches that itch for to perform, to create, to entertain, and to be scary.
Yeah. Also, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving. Will this drop on Thursday?
Yeah, I think this will be our Thanksgiving episode.
Which is pretty great because, I don't know about your feed, but my podcast feed is going to have crickets tomorrow.
Yeah.
Nobody's recording.
Well, this whole week, I think, is pretty light.
I think it is. The few that I listen to that are dailies have still been dropping. But yeah. Not, you know, there's a couple that aren't. And rightfully so, everyone deserves a week off.
It just happens that we now, we had time because I had a day off.
Yeah, and your days off were weird this time.
Yeah, so I have Wednesday, Thursday off, I have to work on Friday, then I have Saturday off. So,
bizarre.
It just kind of worked out that, like, let's record on Wednesday, put it out on Thursday.
Yeah, and we don't bank episodes. We try to keep it as fresh as possible. So we record, and then we edit, and then we post, like, to post the next morning.
Yeah.
So we don't hang on to episodes. I mean, maybe we should, but the stuff that we talk about typically is pretty topical, even though it's not, like, in zeitgeisty topical. Like, it's topical for us.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot of good for us to be banking episodes, I guess.
The only way that would work is if we did a bunch of, like, interviews that didn't have to do with anything specific.
Right. Something upcoming.
Yeah.
There's a couple of interviews I wish that we could have gotten knowing ahead of time, like, what was coming up. Something we're going to address later is a cool documentary that came out. And there's a lot of good opportunities to speak to those people about some stuff.
Yeah.
But we just didn't know. Also, we kind of dropped off the radar in October.
Yeah.
Which was interesting for a haunt podcast. But anyway, on the haunted events side of things, and speaking of Decayed Brigade, we had a show on October 20th at a mortuary, of all places.
Yeah, talk about an awesome place to do an event.
It felt a little taboo at first, but once the event started, it made sense. And
yeah.
It came together, and it was lovely. So what we're talking about is the Mission Viejo Film Festival group put on a horror short film festival to celebrate the season. And through a couple of mutual friends, I was contacted about having the Decayed Brigade perform in some fashion. Not necessarily sliding and boo scaring, but more like atmospheric talent, which we've done in the past.
Yeah.
And I mean, hell, half of us have performed doing atmospheric talent that has nothing to do with being scary. So it was something that we were pretty familiar with. And so we were asked to come on board and portray the family that runs the mortuary. So we were kind of like the ribbon that tied everything together as far as the aesthetic and the feel of the thing.
Yeah.
And kind of fun little interludes in between the shorts. And it was a really great experience, and we got to meet some really cool people. We got to, you know, get dressed up, which is always great. We kind of came up with new costuming and new family. Like, we created our own little weird family.
It's like our own little Addams Family.
It was very Addams Family like.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, and I, from what we heard, you know, the response was very positive, and the attendance for being its first year, I thought was pretty good. I didn't expect a whole lot from it its first year.
I know they were hoping for a lot more, but I mean, for a first year event where you're doing something that no other horror film festival really does,
right?
It's hard to put into words or tell people what's going to happen and how it's all going to fit together. But the guests that were there, which was a decent, how many would you say, like?
30,
yeah, 30 to 40, I mean.
And the chapel is not very big.
Yeah.
So they couldn't have accommodated more
than
60.
I think they wanted close to 100. I don't know how they would have fit that many people in there, because it does feel really small.
It would have been standing room only, which would have been cool.
Yeah.
And they're also, I think they're used to the numbers that they were getting at their other film festival, and hoping that everyone who attended that would attend this, but you're really dealing with a different demographic.
Yes.
So basically year one, you're looking at friends and family are going to be the ones attending.
And then some of the filmmakers were there.
A couple of filmmakers, I think a couple actors.
A couple actors
were
there. But yeah, I mean, especially when you're talking about horror, and then you're talking about indie horror, and now you're talking about indie horror from people that nobody has ever heard of. You're getting into a real subgenre of people that will go see that.
Yeah.
Having said that, the movies that they picked were fucking amazing.
They were so well done.
It
was a pleasure to see those.
One of them was picked up, we don't know by who. I'm assuming something like Blumhouse.
That's what I thought too.
Something like that. But one of them was picked up to make it a full length feature, which is amazing. And then just the other ones were just so well crafted. These were not student films. These were definitely up and coming horror directors. Like, they were really good.
That was a lot of fun. It wasn't something where we would send like a mass invitation for every Decayed Brigade fan to come see, because we weren't performing in the typical Decayed Brigade fashion. So when you think of us in the context of a live stage performance, you're expecting big stunts and lighting and you know, custom sound and all this stuff, and this was much more of a private, more intimate, more atmospheric type thing. And if you only came to see us, you may have been disappointed, because the only thing we were there to do is to be kind of like little interludes in between the flicks themselves. We weren't even supposed to be a very big or noticeable part of the thing. So
yeah, the idea was is that they're in the mortuary watching these films, and we're the family running the place, so we're working, so
moving bodies.
Things would just happen to roll through the chapel at certain times, and we were having a blast doing it.
It was a great time.
My thing was, I guess I was kind of like the gravedigger guy.
You were there, yeah. I'd say caretaker, gravedigger.
And so while we were waiting for the thing to start, we were kind of interacting with the guests as they were arriving to the event. And so I went all the way off by myself to the front of the parking lot, and there was these big planters. So I just was like, I got a shovel. I'm going to start digging some holes. And so I was just digging right next to the driveway, and people would be coming by. And then they'd see the driveway and be like, oh, that must be the place. Then they'd see me, And then they see me digging a hole, and they would keep on driving past. And then they would go in the second driveway just so they didn't have to go next to me.
And then you would just follow them with your eyes the whole time.
It was funny.
That was great. My gimmick was I had a tissue box, and I would go up to people who were in groups laughing and smiling and having a grand old time, and I'd pat them on the shoulder and I'd hand them a Kleenex and tell them that I was sorry for their loss. And some people were like so upset. They're like, what, huh? And other people played along like, oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cute. Alexis was hilarious with her little braids jumping all over the place. That was a lot of fun. That was a really good time. Hopefully we get more of those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, we did a lot of fun stuff. We definitely more comedic than anything. But we also tried to, we watched all the films, and then we tried to, whatever thing that we picked to do between the film, we would try to match the emotional level of the film before it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way, it all kind of made sense. So if it was something that was really scary, we'd try to do something that would scare the audience. If it was something that was funny, we'd do something that would make the audience laugh.
There was actually a really good gag that you designed with Paul that got the whole house. Do you remember with the lights?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the scream?
Yes, that was great. So it was after, what was the movie? I can't remember. It was the really intense one where they're in like the...
Is it the one where they're in the mental
asylum?
Hospital?
Yeah, in the mental hospital.
Yeah.
And so we had this idea where there's like these two stained glass windows that face outside. And so we were like, if you go right up to it, we can turn the lights on, you'll just see shadows of people behind the light, behind the windows, and we'll get everybody to look that direction. And so what we did was we timed it so that we turned the lights on, we saw the shadows, everybody, we couldn't see if everybody was looking, but apparently everybody did look, shut the lights off, and as soon as the lights went off, Paul went through the audience just like with a big scream and just scared the entire room in one go, which is perfect.
It was perfect. Yeah, the lights were, they were just handheld flashlights, and the people in front of the stained glass were backlit, so that all you see was the shadow poking in from the outside. But it was neat, and we're outside just hoping that everyone gets it, and hoping our timing is right, and then, like, we just heard this, like, 1, 2, 3, and click off the lights, and then we hear this banshee scream. Highlight of the night.
Yeah. And it was the last one, which was perfect. It was like the
last
scare
before
they watched the last movie, and then that was it.
They were so gracious to us, and they were so, you know, they really let us just build our own story and create our own world within their world. And I don't know what they were expecting of us, but I get the feeling that we gave them more than what they thought. And that feels good to take something and run with it. So I hope that next year they can loop us in, you know, a little bit more, like kind of fold us into the game a little bit more in a way where maybe we can produce something just that little bit bigger. Kind of like when DB shows are just like every year is a little bit more intense, a little bit bigger, a little bit more produced.
Yeah.
You know, and because they know what they're doing when it comes to film festivals, and they obviously know what they're doing about picking content for those festivals.
They definitely can pick the films, that's for sure.
They were so amazing. I'm sure the website is still
up
there.
I'm going to look because I know they posted links to a couple of the movies, and if I can get the links, I'll put them with the post on our blog. But if you can find, like, Invaders is one of my... I mean, it's only, like, what, 5 minutes long?
It is, and it's not... And is that the one that it's not what you think?
Yes.
Ugh.
And it's just so good.
They're all so good, and they were all such different flavors.
Yeah.
But they were so well made. There was one that was very artsy. The one with the mortician.
Yes. It's very, if you liked Pushing Daisies, the TV show, it was very along that lines.
Yeah, like kind of like the colors were a little bit heightened, and it was a little bit more... not cartoony, but a little bit more exaggerated, and
that,
a lot of like that frame and frame shooting, and
had that sing-songy voiceover.
The voiceover was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish actually that I had the wherewithal to break down all those movies and really talk about them. I don't remember them all. It's been a little while since we've watched them, but they were, you know, we encourage you to seek them out. And like Casey said, we'll link this up in the, I guess what we would call the show notes. And so you guys can check them out and see for yourself. They're really inspiring. And if filmmaking is at all of interest to you, you will love these.
Yeah. Because
they are really done well, I think, anyway.
Yeah. But
yeah, that was a really good time. I hope we do more of that in the future. What else have we been up to?
Well, we've been watching movies.
We've been watching a lot of flicks. So Casey and I have been attempting in our very little connected time together to beef up our filmmaking skills. Like, we each have individual histories of film production in different ways and for different reasons, but we're trying to really strengthen those, and we work really well together. So we've been spending more time on more technical stuff, like as far as composition and you know, using different things with lighting and kind of things like that. And Casey's a writer and he can do all that stuff. I can't write for anything. I can barely write happy birthday on a card, but thank God for Casey. So in that light, we've been taking in more films. And one of the films that we were very happy to catch, because it's also in our favorite time of the year, was Epic Home Haunts.
Yeah.
And so that ties into, we were hoping, you know, about what would be really great interviews to talk about this upcoming thing. We, you know, we've had Rick on the podcast before. We've had John and we've had
Ted.
So we've had the three creative insights that they had were all people who have been, you know, we've been lucky enough to have them on our podcast. And, you know, we got to get them again, because they're both, like, all three of them are constantly working on stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. And I want to talk to John Cook about all the stuff that he did at the different theme parks.
That'd be fun.
And then,
yeah,
you know, the stuff that Ted's been up to. And, you know, we know that Rick's been all over the place, even though, you know, supposedly TPA has ceased. He has not stopped. He's been
everywhere. So,
full throttle.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, we saw this flick and it was, inspiring and very fun. And we saw, they were new faces to me. Like, I didn't recognize most of them. In fact, some of the venues I didn't even recognize, but I don't get out as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your take on it?
I liked it. Definitely the best haunt-related documentary that I think of has ever been made.
You think so? Even better than Seasons of Screams?
Well, yeah, because Seasons of Screams was directly tied to Knots.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, at haunt world in general, the documentaries usually aren't that great. I mean, we watched Haunters, remember, and that one was supposed to be about a bunch of people, and it leaned very heavily towards McKamey Manor, and it ended up almost feeling like a commercial instead of a documentary.
Was that the same one where we watched the couple who had their haunted house?
Yeah.
That was the same documentary?
Mm-hmm.
See, that was odd, because those feel like two completely separate stories.
Yeah.
That I don't even know if they, like, made sense going together.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, a lot of haunt documentaries, they tend to lean into the crazy people in the genre.
Which there are plenty.
And I kind of understand that, because you want a character to kind of anchor your story, I guess.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's not realistic to what the haunt group is. You know, they always pick out these outliers that are nut jobs, and instead of focusing on the people that are in the haunt family, you know?
The core members of your team are likely, like, the Teds, like, the lawyers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the accountants and, like, the people who have very normal construction workers, like, very normal, average, not super high, not super low, just people who happen to be super into Halloween.
Yeah.
But I can see kind of the draw of picking, like, the weird one, because if you talk to your family about you working at a haunted house, I think they project that onto you. Like,
they're
going to assume that you're the weirdo.
Yeah.
So it's almost like personifying the illusion that others have of us.
Maybe, yeah.
In these people.
But I think that's the idea, is to take that illusion away, because
it's a good goal.
Yeah. Because, I mean, 99% of the people in the haunt industry are not like that at all. And so it's
I don't
weird.
Know if 99% is accurate. I think it's more like maybe 75.
Okay, we'll go 75. I'll go with you on that. There are characters, but, you know.
And it does take a little bit of a misalignment somewhere to find this kind of thing fun. But what this flick does is it shows you that it is normal, you know, together, present people who also have this awesome creative streak in them, who want to build these cool things. And in spite of a lot of obstacles, they are able to build this awesome thing that happens to hire people who are a little more off their rocker to actually do the scaring. But it shows you more like, this was interesting because it talked more about the business side of it and like the logistics and as far as permits neighborhood approval and, you know, stuff like that, like safety things and how the haunts have evolved. Like, it was much more interesting from the haunt developer perspective to see them highlighting that aspect of it.
Yeah. And I like the venues that they picked. I think they were pretty good venues to show off. I mean, there's definitely some other home haunts that I think are maybe a little higher profile, but the ones that are unique, the ones that they picked are very unique and different.
Yes, again, different flavors.
Yeah. So.
So if you could have picked that batch, who would you have had be part of it?
God, I don't know.
I think of Perdition.
Perdition would have been fun. I did like that they had Opeachy Haunt as kind of a part of it.
I like that Boot Hill was part of it because I always remembered Boot Hill as being a yard display.
Well, it still is.
It is, for the most technically, part. Yeah. But it's far more than that. Yeah. And it's more than I realized. I mean, I hadn't been down there, oh my gosh, in over 10 years. And it's
trying to think of when the last time I went there. I think I was there 2 years ago.
I feel like you and Vince went once.
Well, the night that we went and did Higgins Manor, we stopped at Boot Hill because, I mean, they're not far from each other.
No.
And yeah, it's like I'm trying to think of the first time that I went down there. It was still pretty sparse, but they talked about that little swamp area. They did have the swamp thing the first year I went. But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it was a little emotional, I think, because it brought up memories of my home haunt.
Sure.
Especially when they started talking about how a lot of people are getting shut down and things like that, and everything that happened with mine.
Yeah.
So it brought back a lot of memories, I guess.
What kind of made me feel like that, almost on your behalf, was the kid, the one who he's 15 or 16.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, I mean, you were that age when you had your haunt, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I started my first haunt, my first what you'd call like a home haunt, I guess. I was in 8th grade, so whatever age that is.
14?
Yeah, 14 maybe.
So you were a youngster as well.
Yeah.
So that made me think of you and knowing who you are now and what you've developed in the haunt community from that time up till now made me feel very optimistic about what this kid's going to do in the future, because I've, you know, from afar, I've gotten to see it happen through you and how much it means to you and how much you've grown and how much you've contributed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to see, you know, being a little bit older and then seeing someone like this who's so young and so driven and yet so perfectly oblivious to what's already happened. Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's only creating what he thinks will work and then making that better. And that's kind of what this industry needs. It gets stagnant if you keep doing the same thing and then tweaking this, tweaking that, making a little bit better. And like, you kind of have to completely scrap it and go, this is what I want. How do I get there?
Yeah.
With your resources.
That's how I was too, because now, especially if you're in Orange County, but now it's so easy to find information on how to do things and copy other people.
Yeah, for better or worse.
And when I was doing it, when I started, the internet didn't really exist, even though it ended up being the downfall of my haunt. But, and so I literally had to figure it out myself. I was like, I want this thing. How am I going to make it?
Well, you had your dad helping you, who is a technical genius. I mean, he can basically build something out of nothing.
Yeah. So he taught me a lot, for sure.
He has an interesting insight into that kind of world, whereas he can help you more manifest that vision that you had. No one could have taught you how to have that vision in the first place.
Yeah.
That was something you had to do.
Yeah. Well, my dad, he was an engineer in the Navy. And so he's a very smart guy, even though he likes to play dumb sometimes, you know.
That's his secret weapon.
Yeah, he's really smart. And so I wanted to make a vortex tunnel, but we didn't have metal. Like, we were out in farmland, really, back then. And so to drive to get any kind of, like, metal, and then we would have had to have a bent. Like, the costs just kind of add up. And so my dad was actually the one who was like, let's just make it out of plywood. And so we actually had to sit down and do all the mathematical all the math on how to do, like, these little cutouts. You know, they're like these little, not even half, like, this, I don't even know what the radius was, but you have to, like, do these really small radii, and you cut out, like, 40 of them per sheet of plywood, and then it takes, like, 3 sheets of plywood, and you bolt them all together, or glue them and screw them together, and it ends up making a 12-foot circle, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all out of two-dimensional wood, so it's, like...
Did you have to do the thing where you soak it, and then when it's still wet, you have to... Like, molded into place?
No, because it was all flat pack. So it's like circles, and you just stick them together. But those little curves eventually make a circle.
Okay, so you had, like, tiny little corners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, each corner was, like, this big, but it just had a small little bend in it. And once you put all those bends together, it made a giant circle.
Definitely a way to do it.
So how big was it? Probably the longer way. Total?
Yeah.
It was a 12-foot diameter circle on the outside. Inside was like 11 and a half feet tall.
How long was it?
And then it was, the only pipes, it was probably close to 25 feet long.
That's really long.
And it was 3 circles. And then we used the old washing machine motor to spin it.
That was the one that I was hoping you'd talk about.
Is, yeah.
Is because he also had an appliance repair business.
Yeah, my dad owned an appliance repair company, and so we had like appliance parts everywhere. So those would eventually almost always find their way into the haunt somehow, because we had all these electric motors and just ran like magnets. Like, man, the magnets inside of a microwave are some of the strongest magnets you will find anywhere.
What use did the magnets have?
Oh, you could use them all kinds of fun things, like hanging stuff when you couldn't, like, screw into something.
Oh, yeah.
You could put it one magnet on the back of the haunt wall and the other one on the outside, and even if it was a 3/4-inch plywood, that thing would hold solid.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, this is the kind of stuff that is really exciting to talk about from, you know, the haunt production standpoint, and that's the kind of vibe that I got out of the film, was like little tidbits that they'd be so excited to share because they took the steps to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they had that problem and they're like, how do I do this? And how do I do it with $20?
Yeah.
And the stuff in my garage.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first fog machine I bought, because you couldn't buy a fog machine at a store. They didn't exist. And so...
They didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't go to Party City.
There was a time, kids.
You couldn't go to Party City and buy a fog machine. So I wanted a fog machine for my haunt, and I was, like, trying to figure out where to get one. And I ended up finding this company in L.A. that provided equipment to like the Pantages and things like that. And so I called them up and I was like, hey, I want to buy a fog machine. They're like, great, it's $600 or something like that. And I was like, awesome, I'll buy it. And they're like, okay, when do you want to come pick it up? I'm like, we'll be there on Friday. And they're like, okay. So we drive all the way to LA to this place that, you know, provides Broadway with all their stuff. And this little 15-year-old kid walks in and I'm like, hey, I'm here to buy a fog machine. And the guy looks at me and he's like, what do you even need this for? And I'm like, oh, I'm building a haunted house at my house. And he just laughed at me. And I was, and he's like, are you sure you want to spend $600 on a fog machine? And I was like, yeah.
You're like, listen, oh, buddy, whatever. If you have to ask, then yeah.
Yeah, like he was one of those people that didn't understand. And then it was funny because that fog machine, if I still had it, would probably still work. That, I mean, the thing was like cast iron or something. It weighed so heavy. I mean, this thing was just a beast.
I bet it's worth a lot of money now,
and,
too.
And I used it every year of my haunt from then on. Never cleaned it. Never, nothing. I would just, at the end of the haunt, I would chuck it in the rafters of the garage.
Typical 15-year-old using shit.
Pull it back out, and it would work perfectly.
Of course.
And now they're so cheap, they're basically, you throw them away at the end of the season. You're like, I'll get a new one next year because they're going to be broken over the summer.
With the exception of the one that we babysat for a year, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
That they don't last like they used to. And you have to clean them really diligently. And yeah, it's a different beast. It could be, I mean, it could be any number of reasons why. But yeah, that old adage, they don't make them like they used to.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah. It was fun. It was fun to relive those memories, other than the getting shut down.
Isn't that kind of part of the game, though? I mean, you don't want to get shut down, but the fact remains that you made enough of an impact, again, for better or for worse, that someone else wanted you to go away. And in a weird little way, that's kind of awesome.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it wasn't even the neighbors, really. It ended up being the neighbors, but it wasn't because of my haunt necessarily. It was the people that came to visit the haunt,
and they addressed that too. It's the fact that people can be kind of shitty sometimes.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, I don't even know if I ever talked about this story on the podcast before
about your haunt.
Yeah, but so I had a haunt called the Wasteland. It existed from when was I in eighth grade? I'm trying to count,
1724.
So, 94 to 99.
Sure. So no, when did you graduate from high school?
99. So.
And you had it all the way through high school?
Yeah.
Your haunt? Okay.
Yeah, so it was, 4 years, right? Which isn't a long lifespan in a haunt, I guess.
However, 4 years of your life out of the 17 that you are alive is a big chunk of your life.
Yeah.
Those are your, you know, your formidable years.
Yeah. So I did a haunt and I had done them before, but they were much smaller scale. So I did one where it was like a little walkthrough in the garage through a mad scientist lair. And, I had done, yard displays and stuff. But this was my first, I'm going to theme something. I'm going to, make a maze out of it. And so it was, I took a lot. I couldn't find anything in the local library because that's where I had to go to get information on this stuff. There was nothing about building a haunted house.
No, why would there be?
But what clicked in my head was that the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland used a lot of magic tricks.
Like illusions
and stuff that magicians perform. So I was like, let me go find some books about magic tricks and then I'll try to figure out ways to incorporate those into my haunt. And so that's basically where I started. And then besides that, as far as the scare factor, I looked at Not Scary Farm, which I'd been going for a couple years. And I was like, let me figure out how all this stuff works. And so the internet was just starting. I think we got the internet in like 96 or something like that. Maybe 96, 97 is when I got it.
I think that's when I ended up with my compact Presario.
Yeah. So everybody back then basically used AOL. You dial up.
Yeah.
And you get this login screen that was like, hey, you're on AOL. And they'd have like a little news section and then like the chat rooms and things and all that stuff. So the last year of my haunt, which was 90, I guess it would have been 98.
If you graduated in 98.
99. So, okay, so 98 would have been the last year. What happened was, little to my knowledge, somewhere in the housing tract where we lived in Temecula, somebody that worked for AOL had been going to my haunt every single year.
Oh.
And he loved it. And I guess AOL that year decided, hey, we're going to, because they know your area code, they know where you're dialing in from, we're going to tell people the best, the top five haunted attractions in your area. And so there wasn't a lot back then, but basically it was like I just happened to log in and then it was like, hey, what are the top haunts in your area? And like I clicked on it and it was Not Scary Farm, Universal Studios, and then my haunt right under it. I was number three. And I was like, what the hell? Like,
wow.
Nobody told me anything about it. And so I clicked it and they had this amazing review, which I kept. I think I sent it to you one time because I found it.
Yeah.
But they wrote up this amazing review and I was like, who, like, no one told me about it. I didn't know anybody had visited the haunt from a company. Like, it was completely out of the blue. And so I was like, well, that's cool. And then I forgot about it.
What time of year did you read it?
It was early October.
Okay.
So I had already been building for a good couple weeks, I think. And I was debuting a brand new illusion that I was really proud of, and it was gonna be awesome. And we decided to open for three nights that year. So because I think Halloween was on a Sunday, so we were gonna do Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Starting on Friday, we knew something was crazy because we had probably double the people we would normally get in a night.
Wow.
And it was okay. Saturday was pretty busy too. And then Sunday, or whatever day Halloween was, I can't remember, it was chaos. Like absolute chaos in the neighborhood. People were parking in front of people's driveways. People were parking, you know, just double anywhere. Parking. I mean, they just like were parking everywhere, and they didn't necessarily called to complain about my haunt. People were calling and saying, hey, there's cars everywhere.
And the kids,
the traffic nightmare, we can't get out. Yeah. Like there's people parked in front of my driveway. Like what's going on? And the cops just kind of followed the scent to this house with a line going like all the way down the street.
Down to the corner.
And then they're like, well, we know what's going on. And so basically they just said, you have to shut down and tell these people to go home.
Oh.
And that was basically the end of my haunt.
What a way to go. Like the worst way to go.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, it was kind of the perfect storm of, you know, the shout out that you got on AOL and it being Halloween and Halloween being on a weekend. If that was the day, you know, if it was actually on a weekend, you know, the trick-or-treating is a little bit more, like, lit.
Well, our neighborhood was always lit.
So it would just be even worse on Halloween.
Yeah, even before we would get about 3,000 people a night.
At the haunt?
At the haunt before that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because they would drive from all over. We'd get people from Lake Elsinore, people from Marietta that were like, hey, I heard about your haunt and I want to come see it.
Again, there wasn't a lot to do out there.
Yeah.
Not that your place wasn't a draw, because I'm sure that it was, but at the same time, it was worth, you know, there was just nothing else going
on. Yeah, and then I had these, it was funny because people, we got some people just because they were curious, because I had these things that I, it was a thing that I found in one of those magic books, and they called them goblin lights, and it was a thing that they used to do in the medieval times to let people know that the that there was a show or some kind of festival going on. And basically they would light these lanterns and let them go up into the sky, kind of like those Chinese lanterns, but these they would tie so they would stay about, this is like old school searchlights, right? So I went to the Army Navy store and they have these military grade what do you call them, those things that you break and they,
like glow sticks?
Glow sticks, but they're military grade, so they're designed for people, if you're in like a plane and you crash, you can drop them on the ground and a search helicopter can see them from the sky, and you can see them from something like 10 miles away.
Wow.
Like, they are ridiculously bright. And so what I did is I did that, and I got some gigantic, almost weather balloons, but not quite, and I filled them with helium. And you don't want to know how much helium one of those balloons take, but it's a lot.
Well, a weather balloon is like the size of five people balled up together.
Yeah, these weren't quite. These are probably like half size. They'd probably be like maybe the size of this table.
But like a meter diameter is gigantic.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of helium. And so I put like two, and I hung them about 100 feet below the balloon so they wouldn't illuminate the balloon. And then I let them go about like 500 feet in the air. So the whole thing is about 600 feet tall. And just these glowing lights. And so I tied them all over my house. So there's like 40 of these glowing lights just like 500 feet above my house. And people would see them for miles and they'd be like, what the hell are those lights? And they would just drive around.
Here's the reason that UFO calls happened.
Maybe. But they would just drive around and then they'd find my house with a haunt.
Oh my God.
And that's how I got a lot of people that way. Like, people would just show up because like I saw these crazy lights and put the family in the car and like, let's go figure out what those lights are.
We could be driving to our doom, but we need to know what this is. That's fantastic. And ever since then, have you just been itching to do another haunt?
Well, we've scratched that itch a few times.
Yeah, kind of.
But it would be fun to do my own.
Yeah. I always have daydreams about this. I want a warehouse space, a nice gigantic ass warehouse space that's tall enough to do like ninja stuff and rock climbing and bouldering, but that's big enough to store a haunt in year round and then build a haunt in when the season comes around, but then also big enough to have slider practice in.
Yeah.
Like, that is
my, cool.
We would have no reason to leave.
Yeah.
Because everything would be there. We have all the training for all our different adventures. We can practice sliding. We can have our haunt and then have some part of it that has like a little, you know, a little bedroom off to the side and a shower, even if it's like a hazmat shower, as long as there's a shower in there, like that's like my dream space.
Yeah.
Like, we need to have one of those. And it'd be even better if it was in, you know, closer to LA, so we didn't have to drive for 3 hours just for a gig.
That'd be cool.
That would be great. But then we can have your haunt and it'd be great. And you can hang those glow sticks again.
I probably would, just for fun.
I wonder how many know those things.
I don't know what the FAA rules are now, because
those are really high up in the air.
Yeah, I was a kid. I didn't even think about it back then. But now, knowing what I know with drones and then how close we are to like all the different airports, Orange County is like the landing path for like, feels like 50 airports. So
that's likely. Also, now Pechanga is a lot bigger than it was, and the traffic is a lot higher. So if you did it at that same place, then you would have that issue with the, you know, if you had that these days, they'd probably tell you to shut it down just from the volume, because you're blocking traffic to the casino.
We'll just do it at the casino.
You could do it at the casino. Be pretty great. So yeah, that movie obviously made an impact on us. It was great to watch. It was good to see familiar faces. It was, you know, endearing and kind of a little time capsule of what things are like now in the home haunt, at least around here. You know, we don't.
Well, I mean, there are some other ones like The Backwoods.
Hobbs Grove. Is Hobbs Grove considered a home
haunt? No. That's a professional.
They're now considered a theme park.
Well, yeah, to the eyes of California, they're a theme park.
According to the fire department.
Yeah, there's a bunch up in Burbank in like a small area.
Because wasn't it the one cul-de-sac that has?
There's so many people that work for the studios up there that that's kind of like their thing in Halloween. Like, you know, they know how to do all that stuff, so they just go crazy with Halloween decorations.
Why not?
You know, I would have loved to see. So if I did it, and let's say I'm going to do completely different ones because there are ones I love, Boo Hill, I love Rotten Apple. But if I was going to do completely different haunts, I would have loved to do Mystic Motel. I would have loved to do the Backwoods. And then it'd be really cool to do Boney Island.
Oh, yeah, Boney
because,
Island.
Because, I mean, they're a rare occasion where it came back this year, so that would have been a fun, uplifting story. Like, hey, we got shut down, but now we're back.
Now we're back. What about Reign of Terror?
That's a professional haunt.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's not a home haunt?
No, they have a huge warehouse. It's like 100,000 square feet or
oh,
something.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that big.
Yeah.
I've obviously never been there.
Yeah. Their haunt, it's really like four or five haunts all put together, and so you wait in line once, and then the haunts are like conga line together, and you go through all of them.
Isn't that what Haunted Vineyard used to be?
Kinda, yeah.
Oh, I missed that place.
Haunted Vineyard was great.
It was great.
Yeah, I probably would have picked those three, because the Mystic Motel, I mean, who puts a dark ride in their house? That's freaking awesome. The Backwoods is great, because they've been around so long, and some of their stuff is just amazing. Like, some of their sets. And then, yeah, Boney Island, I've just loved forever. I've gone a couple times, and it's just such a cool event.
Yeah. Well, maybe, I think that there's room in our world for a volume two.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Mystic Motel, they are doing a Christmas version of their dark ride.
Really?
Yeah. I saw them post about it. I don't have no idea when it's going to be open, what it's about, but it's definitely going to be not a scary thing. It's going to be holiday family fun jaunt through some sort of Christmas stuff.
Good way to pivot.
Yeah.
Make a little bit of extra cash, maybe.
I don't know. They do it for free.
For
I don't
charity.
Know if they get any. Yeah, I don't know if they do donations for any type of charities, but.
That's cool. That's something we'll have to address in the future as far as what holiday stuff is coming up. That's kind of in our genre. Is a Sinister Pointe doing a haunted holiday?
They posted something about it. I don't know if they're going to do it.
Oh, they did. I saw the picture of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they do. I don't know if they'll be at the same spot. That seems like a lot of
space square
footage for a Christmas haunt.
Yeah.
But who knows? More info on all that to come as we get the information.
Fallen Saints usually does one if you're out in the Apple Valley area.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they do one for, like, I don't know, St. Patrick's Day or something?
Well, they're a year-round haunt. They're open year-round. So they do special holiday nights. And then they do for, like, every Friday the 13th is a lights-out night.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they have special stuff going on all the time.
Good stuff. So, we caught another flick recently.
Yeah.
Well, I caught most of it, if we're being honest. There was a bit that I missed. Turn out that it mattered. But, yeah.
Yeah, this one's going to take a little explaining, I think, but it's called Hunt for the Skinwalker. It's a documentary. It's not a horror movie. It's based on... So, it's crazy. So, a skinwalker... I don't even know where to start on this. It's so crazy.
Well, tell us about a skinwalker. The idea of the skinwalker.
So, the idea of the skinwalker, it's a Native American legend that's prevalent through a lot of the tribes in the Southwest area and...
Of the United States.
Of the United States. And a skinwalker is basically like a wizard. I mean, some tribes consider them... evil people. Some tribes consider them like protectors of the tribe. there's kind of like different ideas on what they are, but the one they specifically talk about, the Ute tribe, they see them as an evil wizard, or like an evil shaman who can transform into animal form, and they usually take the form of a wolf, but they can transform into pretty much any animal or thing they want. Hence the term a skinwalker. They can just like transform and walk around as whatever they want.
So what does the skinwalker have to do with the place that they're talking about called Skinwalker Ranch?
So the Skinwalker Ranch is a 600-acre ranch in Utah that sits on the border of the Ute tribe's land, like their reservation. On the other side of Skinwalker Ranch, there's a military fort. I don't want to call it a base because it was a fort. It's not, I don't even know if they use it anymore. It might be abandoned, kind of like the one in Irvine. But basically what the Ute tribe said is that because the Skinwalkers were outcasts, and then that's like the edge of their land, the Skinwalkers use the area on the other side of, there's like a sandstone ridge that between the Skinwalker Ranch and the Utes reservation. So the Skinwalkers use that property or that side of the thing to protect themselves from the tribe. And so that's, they call it the Path of the Skinwalker. And that area is where the Skinwalkers migrate, I guess, or go back and forth to do what they need to do so they don't get onto the tribal lands.
Yeah.
So that's like the gist of it. And so that's how it got the nickname Skinwalker Ranch, is because that it's right on the path of the Skinwalker.
Okay. So what, in the film, they talk about just typical UFO sightings. And this is a connection that I didn't make throughout the entire film. What does the metal things that people see, what does that have to do with Skinwalkers?
Well, I'm going to say that this documentary kind of fell into what some documentaries, like the trap that a lot of documentaries fall into.
And which is?
That is, they don't pick a story and stick with that story, and they kind of go off on these tangents that don't really matter to what the main objective of this documentary should be.
Right, like they opened the film like it was an episode of Coast to Coast, like they're talking about UFOs and sightings,
yeah,
and like light beams of light giving people cancer, and then suddenly they're talking about like this ancient mystic spirit.
Yeah. So the documentary kind of does go all over the place, and it's like over 2 hours long, which is, and I think the problem is especially for documentary filmmakers, is they're so close to the source material that they don't know what to toss out and what to keep in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with other movies, you have an outside editor and you have other influences, producers and stuff. And like, you know, they do test screenings and all that stuff to kind of really whittle down to what is the story I'm telling? How do we get there as quickly as possible?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing it yourself, you don't really know. you love all this footage, and
yeah,
I want to put all this in here.
Yeah.
But does it really need to be in there?
I definitely felt like there were two stories.
So really, the documentary is about all the activity that happens in that county, which is a lot, apparently. Which has to do with UFOs, cattle mutilations.
Things being moved and put in weird places.
Kind of like paranormal activity, yeah, like things being moved. All kinds of weird stuff. Like, it just, like, if you can think of a paranormal thing, I don't think they talked about vampires, but who knows? Maybe there's vampires there too. But so it was all over the map. But the main gist is this there is the, it's weird because you kind of have to say that there is something happening there, whether it's a natural phenomenon, aliens or paranormal activity or these skinwalkers, there is something going on there because of the tale that unfolds.
Yeah.
Like, the basic gist of the tale is that the original ranch owners, they wanted to breed these, like, high-end Angus cows for, like, these really, you know, the kind of steak that you get in, like, you know, Five Diamond restaurant in New York. Like,
these fancy are fancy schmancy cows.
Very high-end, very expensive cows to raise and everything. And they were having all this stuff happen. They had, like, over 30 cows that were, like, mutilated within, like, months of moving in.
Yeah, and that alone is cause for upset.
Yeah.
Regardless, I mean, of that's
their business, right? So even if it was a jealous neighbor going out there and doing it, that's, like, fucked up, you know?
But a jealous neighbor would leave evidence.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they brought in trackers to figure out if it was the animal, if it was humans, if there were cars, like, because this place is way out in the middle of nowhere. It's protected by a river on one side, the giant rock sandstone cliffs on the other side, and there's only one road in and one road out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very isolated, protected place. So if anybody was sneaking in, they'd have to go over these giant cliffs or across this big river.
Or already live there and hide like the people from The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah. So some of the video, so what unfolds is basically Robert Bigelow, who owns Bigelow Aerospace, and I think he was a partner in a bunch of tech stuff.
I was going to say there's a tea company called Bigelow.
Maybe his family owns that too. I don't know. Anyway, he decides to help these people out, and he's going to bring in, he starts a company called, I don't remember what it was. It was like NIDS or something. It was like,
oh yeah,
National something for Discovery Science.
National Institute of Discovery Science.
Yeah. So National Institute of Discovery Science. You were paying attention. Good for that.
A little bit.
And so he creates this kind of like nonprofit, and he gets a bunch of like scientists, biologists, you know, all these high-end PhD guys. We're going to go and figure out what's going on. So they go down there and they record some crazy stuff, and they're like, this is weird. So Robert Bigelow actually ends up buying the property from the family that owned it, because basically they're like, this place sucks.
We don't have any cattle to sell anymore.
Yeah. So he buys it, and he has free reign of it now. So he kind of goes through, and they're like, how are we going to try to document this stuff? Because every time they try to document something, they're like, okay, this thing happened. And being scientists, they're like, if it's science, it's repeatable. So let's try to capture that thing. So they come up with a method and how they're going to capture it. They get the everything together to do it, and that thing would never happen again, but something else weird and just as mysterious would happen.
Or things would happen right off camera.
Yeah, like,
right out of the sensor.
David said that it was almost like whatever it was knew they were trying to capture it, and it was purposely altering what it was doing just to fuck with them, basically.
Very odd collection of events that were happening that were just, you know, documentable enough to warrant more investigation, but not documentable enough to be proof of anything.
Yeah.
There was no actual proof or sightings that were, you know, like they had a couple of interviews of people who saw things happen. And they're not really explainable. It could have been some weird thing. We're convinced that it's one big asshole and it's just like gas coming out and making everybody hallucinate. And like every time they drill a hole, of course, because gas gets released. So we're not really sure what's happening.
Yeah.
But people are being affected by it. And, you know, things that are isolated incidents are not being directly linked, but they're being emotionally linked. And it's, I don't know, it was a very weird thing to try to watch people jump through these hoops. And then they have these consultants, professionals, I don't know who they got to be part of it, but The one guy that was so passionate about it, you're hoping that he had a story, and he didn't even have a direct story about anything that happened
Yeah,
to him.
like he actually went on the property and he was like, but nothing happened for me.
No.
So
I was like, what?
You're like, what?
The one guy.
The one guy. So, but then the other thing is the government found out that Robert Bigelow was doing these investigations, and they took some of the evidence that they were able to capture, and they took it to Harry Reid, which was is a senator or congressman for Utah, and he took that information and the National Security Council and the Department of Defense. Apparently, at the time, it was top secret, but they had a program called ATIP, which was like Advanced Aerial Threat something protocol. But basically, they wanted to know if the things that they were capturing were a threat to national security. And apparently, they were whatever they documented was good enough for them to give Robert Bigelow's team $22 million to continue their investigation. And not only that, but sent Department of Defense scientists on the property to join the investigation as well. So, I mean, it would have never gotten that far if there wasn't some kind of really good evidence. What it was, I don't know that they presented, because I didn't see anything in the video that warranted $22 million.
Oh,
but
hell no.
There were a couple really cool videos, and whether they were natural phenomenon or what, I don't know. But there was one video, or no, one was a still of those awesome like light rays coming out of the ground.
That was pretty cool, but at the same time, not completely impossible to explain away to something else.
Yeah. And then the other one were those buildings that appeared out of nowhere.
Again, I think that's explainable.
Yeah, like it could be like refraction of light or something.
Yeah.
But it was like a video. They were filming like a kind of like a small little hill and out into the pasture. And then like a mirage almost, like these two buildings just sort of appear. And then they're there for like a second. And then they kind of mirage away.
Yeah, but the way that we have survived as long as we have is we can create something out of nothing for the sake of survival. So we can tape an abstract shape and make it look like a tiger. And it's a good thing because there's a tiger in that bush.
Yeah.
But even though you can't see the whole tiger, you can see bits of it that remind you, oh shit, that's a tiger. Like, we take that power, and since we don't have to deal with tigers and bushes anymore, we apply it to clouds of dust in the desert.
Yeah.
And bright lights in the sky and like all this shit where it's like, we're seeing things that aren't there. Like, we like to anthropomorphize things, and we like to put things in a context that we can wrap our little pea brains around that have nothing to do with what's actually over there.
Yes. And so anyway, the investigation goes on, and Robert Bigelow sold the property to a new owner in 2016, I guess. And the new owner, they interviewed, you may have been asleep by this time.
Probably.
but they interviewed the new owner, but they disguised him because he was like...
Was that the guy who had a lot of business ventures?
Yes.
With the fancy watch. And then later in the flick, they actually show the guy.
They don't show him.
Is it just another guy dressed in black with the same watch and the same ring, but they showed his face?
They never showed his face.
They did, and there was like a campfire circle. There
no,
was
that
the
was
guy.
A different guy.
Was it a different dude? Because they were dressed exactly the same.
No, that was a different dude.
Okay.
Because
that would have been hilarious.
But did you see the photos that he showed?
I don't think so. I don't
so,
know.
So going back to the UFO thing, so the whole other sideline to this was all the UFO sightings that happened in the area.
All the silver almonds.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of UFO sightings in this area. And it happens a lot at night, and I guess like just a beam of light will pop down on you and then turn off, and then you're just like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
But you never really see what did it. It's just a beam of light out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's only at night. Well, would you notice if it happened during the day?
But I guess like some people have gotten severe burns. Like they said, one person that it happened to died of cancer recently.
Yeah.
So they're trying to kind of say like maybe... It's connected to these light beams that are hitting people. You know, it's a stretch, but...
What photos did that guy show?
So the new owner, who whoever he is, he obviously has money. So he's continuing the NIDS investigations on the property. And they've installed a bunch of new high-tech equipment. They have perimetered the entire property with fencing and electronic stuff so that they can, if anybody besides them gets on the property, they know. So they're, they basically have locked down the property. And the scary thing is there's like a few guys running around with like military grade weaponry. Like, who are these dudes like
Whoa.
in full like battle armor, right? And like AK-47s and shit, and or like M16s, and
That's so manly.
like what is going on out there that they need that kind of weapons?
Look, everybody needs a sense of purpose in life.
But he did show they did a lot of night surveying is like one of the main things they've been doing because of all the UFO activity, and they got a bunch of photos of UFOs, and they're like some of the best photos you'll ever see of a UFO if they're real. Like, they're very detailed, like, they must be using top of the line camera gear in order to capture this stuff.
So you mentioned that this thing was next door to a defunct military outpost. Could that be a front for some other kind of military installation? And these are like testing aircraft, kind of
Could
like what
be.
happens in your Area 51,
Yeah,
where
and we
things
do
are
know that
flying all
they
over.
spread those types of projects around because you don't want to centralize everything in one area. And
And you don't want anyone to know that it's there. Like Area
yeah.
51, everyone knows that it's there. But this place, even though it's weird for other reasons, it could be something else.
Yeah,
And I
could
know that
be.
there's weapons research that has to do with sound, with lasers, with different kinds of lighting and things like that for like really targeted attacks, but I don't know why they would do that onto a civilian.
It wouldn't be the first time the government had done civilian testing.
Accurate. True, maybe. And I think it's kind of fun. But I mean, it's not.
Hashtag syphilis.
Or I was thinking of the MK Ultra
Or MK Ultra
project.
too.
But
I think
oh,
syphilis
what was I
was the
thinking of?
original one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a
That happened
sad
down
day.
south. They gave all the white people the syphilis drugs. But then they're like, well, what happens to people if you don't treat syphilis? And so all the minorities, they were just like, yeah, let's just not give them the drug and see what happens. And
Damn
so
it.
they, it goes into your brain and you go crazy.
Our ancestors were dicks.
Yeah.
You know what? Our modern day cohorts are dicks too. I mean, if I were an alien species, I'd be like, fuck no, those guys are nuts. I'm out of here. Totally missed the
Yeah.
point of humanity.
So, Hunt for the Skinwalker. If you like conspiracy theories and things, you may find parts of it interesting. I think it draws out too long. If it was like a under an hour and a half, it might have been a solid.
Oh, I would want that to be a half hour episode of some other series. Like, that was way too much to have a question, have like four questions asked, have zero answers provided, and to have the same tone throughout the whole damn thing.
Oh yeah, it's very a very low key, like put you to rock you to sleep kind of documentary. So you
Yeah.
have to be on point if you want to stay awake through this thing.
2 hours. I mean, like, the composition wise and like the way that it looked, like the editing was awesome. That was fun to watch, and like
Yeah.
watching the way that they decided to show things, and like again with what we're learning, we're noticing different things, and like from that aspect, totally fun. Again, should have been a fucking half hour. Should not have been a 2 hour project. Like, it was an hour and a half for me because I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Like, it just was the same tone.
I'll give it an hour. It would
Okay.
have
Well,
been
you're
good.
more tolerant for these kind of things anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I
I've
just
watched
don't.
some really bad ones on Amazon. Like, I
I
love Amazon Prime, but let me tell you, they have some horrible documentaries on there.
Thank you for calling Amazon. You're greenlit.
If you want to test your amplitude for staying awake,
Oh, I
oh,
don't.
like, man, there are some. And I'm not even talking just conspiracy theory stuff. Like,
Just
if you want to
poorly.
watch a great documentary on Led Zeppelin, let me tell you, there's one on. There's one. And the funny thing about this documentary is it was so low budget, they couldn't afford the rights to the music that they were talking about, so it's filled with sound-alike music. So it's all sound-alike Led Zeppelin music.
Oh, no.
In a Led Zeppelin documentary.
See, that's a step in the process of becoming the filmmaker you want to be, right? That's totally understandable. It's where you should be. That's where you are in that moment, and that's great. Should it be on a streaming service? Probably not.
No.
Maybe
take it
put
to
put that on your external hard drive and cherish it and show your kids someday and like know that you did.
Maybe take it to a really small film festival just for fun.
Sure. But does it need to be on Amazon?
No.
Let's just because we can doesn't mean that we should.
So let's talk about something that just because you can should we?
That's the best segue I've ever heard.
So, a town in North Carolina.
I'm intrigued already.
Yeah. Decided to make Bigfoot their official town animal.
Tell me more.
Not only that, but they are now having annual Bigfoot Festival.
I'm still on board.
So now the reason that I'm bringing this up is because we love when Nani watches videos. Now this entire thing happened because a local person to the town was out walking their dog and happened to be recording for some reason and caught a Bigfoot near the town. And so now everybody has Bigfoot fever. So it's going to be like... It's gonna be like Loch Ness. You're gonna be able to get like little Bigfoot bobbleheads and all kinds of stuff there, and you can go to the Bigfoot Festival. Hopefully, it's right near October because you can go see Bigfoot. Then you can hop down to Salem and go to October Salem.
Oh yeah, you've got an East Coast tour.
There's a pumpkin festival in north of Salem you can go to. I mean, you could have a lot of fun in there.
And you can go down to South Carolina and just keep driving down, then you can end up at Horror Nights in Orlando.
Yeah.
You can make a whole thing about it.
I know you did. That's a fun drive.
All right,
anyway,
so let's see.
Finding this video in its original form is ridiculously hard because now there's all those crazy paranormal YouTubers that are like, let's dissect the video. And it's like, they take a 1-minute video and turn it into an hour episode.
Hey man, you gotta make content out of something.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us.
So this is actually a story about the Bigfoot Festival.
Okay.
From the local news station, but they show the original footage
in its entirety.
Like yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was the only way I could find the actual footage.
I kind of fast forwarded. Let's watch it over here
through.
So that the end it'll pick up the audio.
Yeah. Hold on. Can I raise the audio? We want to face it this way?
Yeah.
Sasquatch celebration in the mountains of western North Carolina. This Saturday, Main Street in Marion turns into a bash all about Bigfoot. The man behind the festival.
It was the closest I've ever been.
A local expert with a close encounter of his own.
It was huge. It was on two legs. It was bipedal. The hair on the head and the body was real stringy and matted. There was no hair on the face, and the nose was flat. You could almost see up its nostrils.
John Bruner documents sightings across the country and runs the Bigfoot 911 Facebook group. For centuries, trackers have been trying to trap the elusive creature. We've seen footprints, photos, and shaky video. This new festival expected to be the biggest in the eastern U.S., attracting enthusiasts from around the country. And it's more than just Yeti-themed knickknacks. There's knocking.
Okay, all right. We've seen enough of this.
Okay, so what do you think about the video?
Well, in what way?
Is it Bigfoot?
Well...
We need the Nani seal of approval or not.
Why? Okay, so there's this tiny little dog that runs off in the distance for some reason, but then runs in the opposite direction of where this phenomenon is supposed to be walking. And it's this, like, all-black image. Like, I don't know where this guy is saying that he can see up his nose, because he's very far away from this thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't even see it long enough to really see what it was. Like, I guess we could go through frame by frame and try to capture it, but I mean, I couldn't tell you what it was, but it doesn't seem like, I don't know, anything.
It seemed too staged to me. Like, why did he happen to be recording?
Why was he out there? I mean, the dog not being on a leash, okay, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's not like he's going to get hit by a car. And the dog runs off and gives zero fucks that there's a Bigfoot monster in the
Yeah,
grass
like if it
next
was
to him.
Willow and there's a Bigfoot monster, she'd be growling her ass off. She'd be like, dude, guys, we're not going that way.
She would also be running the other way, but she would be doing it in a different way. This
Yeah.
other dog was like, doo, 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 and just sniffing tall grass where 20 feet to the dog's right supposedly is this massively elusive creature, which I know the dog wouldn't care if it's elusive or not, but
He would still
still,
sense that there's a giant
he would,
animal.
yeah, because he's out in nature, he probably smells really strong with
Yeah.
all that fur. I think the dog would have picked up on that. So yeah, it did seem very staged, and I mean, I won't pass any judgment on the dude. He lives that life, and that's what, the reason he gets up every day, and that's okay. He didn't sound very sincere, but he didn't sound like he was pulling any strings either. I think that he was just like,
Like he could have been hoaxed. Like, someone could be like, oh my God, that's the Bigfoot guy who's always talking in town. Because obviously, this is a small
maybe.
town, so everybody knows each other. They're like,
Yeah.
hey, Fred, go put on that mask and go run across the grass when he's walking his dog in the morning. Like, they could have totally just been fucking with him.
Probably. I mean, didn't he seem just like a little passive?
He did, yeah.
Like a l I mean, maybe he'd been talking about it for a long time and he's really sick of talking about it. And
Well,
he'd be
yeah,
like, "Oh,
this,
fuck. Let's
yeah.
can we roll that back one more time?"
First one, because it's
Sure.
longer.
Watch Celebration in the mountains of Western North Carolina. This Saturday, Main Street in Marion turns into a bash
So
all
it's
about
this guy right there?
Bigfoot. The man behind the festival,
It was the closest I've ever been.
a local expert with a close encounter of his own.
It was huge. It was on two legs. It
I
was
mean, it is
bipedal.
big.
The hair on the head and the body was real.
Okay, so he's saying it's the closest he's ever been, which is implying that he's been close to Bigfoot in the past. When the hell has he been close to Bigfoot in the past? And how did he. Well, that was fun. Where did you find it?
That was sent to me by someone.
I love our listeners
Yeah.
who send us stuff. That's fantastic. I don't know. Nani thinks it's bullshit, like every other video, but this one is interesting on the sociological level. Like, what is that guy's motivation? And why?
Well, he wanted a Bigfoot festival, maybe. I don't know. He got it.
He did get it. I mean, he got it to the point where the state's animal is now Bigfoot.
Not the state, the town.
The town. Oh, thank God. Okay. I was a little worried.
We're changing our state animal from the grizzly to Bigfoot.
What is it, North Carolina?
I don't know what North Carolina's was. I just know California's. I mean,
I
we're really
don't
the only state that matters, so.
know.
I mean,
Oh, Lord.
95% of it's on fire, and
Well, it was. It's
the
better now. Now it's just burnt and slipping away slowly because of the rains hitting the burn area.
Yeah.
Oh, God. We're gonna slip into the ocean. No one's gonna
That'll
care.
be fine.
Well, Hollywood's moved to Georgia. So we don't need LA anymore.
No.
It can go away. Catalina's fun for scuba diving, and if it's underwater, you could still scuba dive there. So that's really
Except
not
you
a
could
loss.
scuba dive inside the casino.
Inside the casino?
Yeah, well, if it's underwater.
Yeah, there you go. It'll be
Yeah.
cool. It'll be like the Lost City of Atlanta.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Anything else going on?
I don't think so. As the weeks go, I think of things that I want to mention or talk about, and then I forget to write them down, and then they're gone forever. So I don't have anything else that I can actively think about. Do you have anything else?
No.
Do we have any events coming up?
Black Cat Friday is, if you're listening to this on Thanksgiving, it's tomorrow. You can get passes to Midsummer Scream super cheap, and they come with a fun little like bundle of stuff, like a t-shirt and things. So
Wow, That is cool.
You can go and check out the sale. And then they have their season screenings event coming up. It's like a midsummer screen craft fair. So think of all the fun things, like all the crafty things from Midsummer Scream, but in a smaller location. Mm-hmm. And Cassandra Peterson announced that she's going to be there signing.
Oh, yay.
So you can go meet her.
That's neat. You remember that arts and crafts store? There was like a pop-up store at the Buena Park Mall. And they had like that cool Americana stuff and like the vintage things. And you bought me those peacock feather earrings.
And we also bought like wasn't it like a bag of hot chocolate or like a really awesome hot chocolate?
Yeah, there was. And then we got like a thing of fudge or something like that. Like some other neat thing. Is it kind of like that before Halloween-y type stuff?
Yeah, and I assume it's going to be probably some Christmas / Halloween stuff. Maybe like some cool ornaments you can put on your tree.
How cool.
Well,
that sounds fun.
I'm sure if you go to midsummerscream.org and find the link to that, they'll probably have a list of the vendors that are going to be there.
Cool. That sounds like fun. That's on Friday?
No,
that's the Midsummer Scream thing.
Yeah, the ticket sale is on Friday. I don't remember the date for the season screamings event.
More
but I know it's going to be probably closer towards Christmas-ish. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the coming weeks.
We need to find our way into Knott's Merry Farm and report on that. I hear it's gorgeous.
I've heard they have those cool lanterns, like the ears, the Mickey ears, but they're lanterns.
And they change depending on where in the park you are?
Yeah, and they do the glow snow thing in Ghost Town, and the lanterns like interact with the show.
That's
somehow
cool.
So yeah,
very clever. Yep, so we'll have to check that out. In lieu of any other things, I think that basically that covers it.
I think that's it. You can follow us on Facebook at Tales from the Fog. You can follow us on Instagram at Tales from the Fog. You can follow Veronica on Instagram at
Veronica Voices, and on Twitter.
And on Twitter. Voices. Are you still twitting?
I'm more passive observer, but because the stuff that I think of that would be a good Twitter post, I think is funny, but I really doubt anyone else cares, so I don't even bother posting it. But I do a lot of reading other, like a lot of comedians and comics and like other podcasters and stuff. I'll read their stuff. But
cool.
Yeah, I'm not an active player.
Decade Brigade. You can follow us on the YouTubes at Decade Brigade Official. Finally got all three shows up.
Mm-hmm.
The last show took 6 days to upload. I don't know why it was so slow. It's so much slower than the other ones, but
I don't know. Like, did we get throttled or something?
Maybe. I was probably using a lot of bandwidth between all the work I've been doing.
Ugh. Anyway, they're up now.
We're supposed to be unlimited, but who knows?
We can relive all the glory.
Yeah.
The Decade Brigade shows.
And
they are glorious.
I'm trying to think. There is a haunt convention coming up in February.
Haunter X.
Haunter X is going to be at the Fairplex in Pomona.
And that's more home haunt.
Yeah.
Oriented.
It's going to be much more DIY.
That reminds me, I said formidable when I meant formative. weak in words. Anyway, yeah, find us on the social medias. Check out the blog post associated with the podcast to see all the different links to things that we've referenced. Go watch some flicks. Go check out some new haunted stuff on the YouTubes and things. And the season doesn't end. The Halloween season is year-round, so live it and love it.
Yeah, and with those words of wisdom, until next time, guys, we'll see you in the fog.
Bye.